I'd like to call the hearing to order. I'd like to welcome our witness today, David Glaoui, President Trump's nominee to be the next Undersecretary for Intelligence and Analysts of the Department of Homeland Security. David, congratulations on your nomination. I'd also like to take a moment to recognize the sizable family contingent you have behind you today and thank your husband, Perry, for his unwavering support. I think it's also important to pay tribute and thanks, thank your family for its honorable government service. Perry is a supervisory special agent at the FBI. Your father, Jim Glaoui, served in the Korean War. Your brother-in-law, Gerald Salinas, served in Desert Storm, and your sister, Dr. Jane Glaoui, works at the VA. I thank all of you for your service to your country and your dedication and selfless service. Our goal in conducting this hearing is to enable the committee to consider Mr. Glaoui's qualifications and to allow for a thoughtful deliberation by our members. He's already provided substantive written responses to more than 80 questions presented by the committee and its members. Today, of course, members will be able to ask additional questions of the nominee. David, let me just warn you, when you see nobody beside Mark and I, this is a good thing for a nominee. David comes to us with more than 24 years of national security and law enforcement experience. He began his career as a Houston police officer before serving as a federal agent with the U.S. Postal Inspection Service and as a special agent with the FBI. In 2012, Mr. Glaoui was named the Deputy National Intelligence Manager for Threat and Finance and Transnational Organized Crime before serving as the Chief Intelligence Officer for the United States Customs and Border Protection Office of Intelligence. Mr. Glaoui is currently supporting the National Security Council as a Special Assistant to the President and Senior Director for Homeland Security. David, you've been asked to lead the Department of Homeland Security's intelligence and analyst component at a time when we are facing complex, evolving, and continuous threats to the homeland. The intelligence community is tracing threats from state and non-state actors to our cyber and critical infrastructure, and we continue to debate the scope and scale of our U.S. intelligence collection and legal authorities. I expect you'll be a forceful advocate for the intelligence community in those discussions while maintaining a steadfast respect for the rule of law. As I mentioned to prior nominees before this committee, I can assure you that the Senate Intelligence Committee will continue to faithfully follow its charter and conduct vigorous and real-time oversight over every intelligence community entity, its operations, and its activities. We'll ask difficult, probing questions of you and your staff, and we expect honest, complete, and timely responses. Your law enforcement and intelligence experience prepare you well to support DHS, and I'm hopeful that you will look at the department with a fresh set of eyes and a new perspective as you chart its course moving forward. I look forward to supporting your nomination and ensuring a consideration without delay. I want to thank you again for being here, for your years of service to your country, and I look forward to your testimony. And I now recognize the Vice Chairman for any comments he might have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and welcome, Mr. Glaoui. And let me say, I think this is the earliest Intelligence Committee meeting I've ever attended, and it shows my commitment to your appearance and the questions I have for you, that because unlike the Chairman, who only lives close, I actually live back in my home state of Virginia, and you know, I can assure you, when I was governor, there was a lot less traffic. So congratulations on your nomination as the head of the Office of Intelligence and Analysis. This position sits at a critical juncture between the analytic work of the intelligence community and the information sharing role of the Department of Homeland Security. If confirmed, your job will be to ensure that the critical pieces of information are delivered immediately throughout the department, as well as to your partners at federal, state, local, and tribal department and agencies that need it. I believe that you have an understanding of this need, given your background in law enforcement and the intelligence community. I also appreciate the support you've received from my friend, former ODNI Jim Clapper, and from law enforcement organizations representing the nation's chiefs of police, county sheriffs, and narcotics officers. But let's be clear, DHS INA requires a strong leader. While the organization's mission is defined, it continues to evolve and mature since the creation of DHS over a decade ago. I remain concerned about the level of sharing with law enforcement, the large contractor workforce, and the whole fusion center concept. We have a fusion center in Virginia. Conceptually, it makes sense. I'm not sure it's been implemented in the right way and would love to, again, have your fresh set of eyes look at this. The truth is, this job has never been easy, and it's not going to be easy now going forward. If you are confirmed, I will also expect your full cooperation with this committee's bipartisan investigation into Russia's cyber attacks and interference in our 2016 presidential election and the concerns about future meddling with our election and voting systems. I've asked DHS to share with this committee, even if we cannot reveal them publicly, the names of the 21 states that the department testified last week were attacked by Russian hackers. I've written to and spoken with Secretary Kelly about this matter, and as the Oversight Committee for all intelligence issues, this committee is entitled to have that information. I want to thank the chairman because this week the chairman and I sent a letter to all relevant state election officials asking that this information be made public. As I said last week, I don't see how Americans are made safer when they do not know which state election systems the Russians potentially attack. And I particularly feel this way since my home state of Virginia has major state elections this year. Again, thank you for appearing before the committee, and I look forward to your testimony. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Vice Chairman. I can attest to the fact this is the earliest he has ever been here. I'd like to now recognize the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee to introduce our nominee, Senator Chuck Grassley. Senator Grassley, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Senator Burr and Ranking Member Warner. Before I read a 3 or 4 minute statement, I'd like to say that I'm proud to be here to introduce to the committee a person whose family and he has deep roots in Iowa, glad to be here. And I think if I could probably give one sentence which would repeat something you said as you talked about him, because I'll be repetitive of some of the things you said, but you talked about his honorable service within government and his public service, well qualified to take this position. So I would emphasize that as I say that I'm proud to recognize David Dlawe as a nominee for Undersecretary for Intelligence and Analysis at DHS. He is a dedicated public servant with over 20 years of national security and law enforcement experience. He currently serves on the National Security Council as Special Assistant to the President and Senior Director for Homeland Security. Prior to this, the nominee served as Chief Intelligence Officer for the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Mr. Dlawe is a former police officer and federal agent with both the U.S. Postal Inspection Service and the FBI. In 2007, he served in Iraq and Africa on a joint FBI deployment with the Department of Defense. Following this tour, he was a senior advisor at the National Counterterrorism Center. In 2012, the nominee was named Deputy National Intelligence Manager for Threat Finance and Transnational Organized Crime, where he oversaw and integrated the intelligence community's data collections and analyses. In 2014, he began serving as National Security Council, on that council as a senior intelligence official responsible for implementing the President's strategy on transnational organized crime. In 2015, Mr. Dlawe was awarded the National Intelligence Superior Service Medal for his extraordinary contribution to the U.S. intelligence community and our nation's security. The nominee is an Iowa native, as I've said, still has family in Iowa. He's a graduate of my alma mater of the University of Northern Iowa. and also a graduate of Harvard University's JFK School of Government. He got started in law enforcement and advanced his impressive career with characteristically outstanding Iowa work ethic. He shared with me how much these roots mean to him, and I appreciate his commitment to putting them to work in this new position for our nation, as he has several positions in the past. Mrs. Lawe's mother, Nancy, is someone who I've crossed paths with for a long time in Iowa as well, I'm proud to say. And I know she's glad to be here with the rest of her family and his friends today to celebrate with him and to support him through this process. Thank you for holding this hearing, and I urge you to support his nomination to fill this very important post. Thank you.
Chairman Grassley, thank you for that very thorough introduction. And before I, David, I ask you to stand and be sworn in, I want to recognize your mother, Nancy. I didn't recognize her earlier when I entered, recognized your dad. I also want to recognize Wyatt, even though he left the room, and your daughter, Alexis, who is just a absolute doll. If you will, raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, sir.
Please be seated. David, you're now sworn in, and before we move to your statement, I'd like to ask you five standard questions that the committee poses to each nominee who appears before us. They just require a simple yes or no answer for the record. Do you agree to appear before the committee here or in other venues when invited?
Yes.
If confirmed, do you agree to send officials from your office to appear before the committee and designated staff when invited?
Yes.
Do you agree to provide documents or any other material requested by the committee in order for us to carry out its our oversight and legislative responsibilities?
Yes.
Will you both ensure that your office and your staff provide such materials to the committee when requested?
Yes.
Do you agree to inform and fully brief to the fullest extent possible all members of the committee of relevant intelligence activities rather than only the chair and the vice chairman?
Yes.
Thank you very much. We'll now proceed, David, to your opening statement. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Senator. Chairman Burr, Vice Chairman Warner, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today as the President's nominee for Undersecretary for Intelligence and Analysis at the Department of Homeland Security. I'm honored to have been nominated by President Trump, and I'm humbled to receive the support by Secretary Kelly, Deputy Secretary Duke, and Director of National Intelligence Codes. Before we begin, I'd like to thank Senator Grassley. Born and raised in the state of Iowa, I've learned at an early age about the importance of civic duty and serving your community. I've never dreamed that one day I would have the opportunity to meet and get to know an Iowa legend, a true Iowa legend. Thank you. I want to thank again Senator Grassley for the heartfelt introduction and nearly 60 years of service to the country and the people of Iowa. Next, I'd like to take a moment to recognize my family. I'm grateful for their support and sacrifice that allowed me this opportunity. With us today are the bedrocks of my life, my 20-year partner and husband, Perry Gorsch, an FBI supervisory special agent at the Washington Field Office, and our two wonderful children, Alexis and Wyatt. I think Wyatt had to leave here. Also here is my father, Jim Glowey, who's an Army veteran drafted for the Korean War, my mother, Nancy Glowey, a retired kindergarten teacher, both from Davenport, Iowa, my sister, Dr. Jane Glowey, who works for Veterans Affairs Medical Center, and her husband, Gerardo Salinas, a Desert Storm veteran and also works for the Veterans Affairs in Davenport office, my mother-in-law, Beverly Gorsch, a lifelong volunteer in her community in Keister, Minnesota, and I would want to recognize my deceased father-in-law, Roger Gorsch, who retired as a high school teacher and athletic coach, who is here with us in spirit. I would also like to thank my family and my friends and coworkers who have sort of supported me throughout my life. I would not have this opportunity without them. The mission statement of DHS is clear and direct. With honored integrity, we will safeguard the American people, our homeland, and our values. DHS faces a complex and evolving threat environment and must work across the federal government in concert with our state, local, tribal, territorial, and private sector partners. I have over 24 years in law enforcement and intelligence experience, and if confirmed, I'll apply that knowledge and lessons learned to drive intelligence and operational integration and share information, deliver unique analysis, and identify vulnerabilities, position resources, and ultimately mitigate threats. INA has one of the broadest customer bases in intelligence community. and meeting the varied demands is a challenge. If confirmed, I intend to focus INA's analytic capacity on areas where they are positioned to add value, areas like trade, travel, cyber, borders, marine, and aviation security. INA's greatest strength, without question, is its people. If confirmed, it will be my honor to lead the Homeland Intelligence professionals at INA as we endeavor to implement Secretary Kelly's vision by meeting the needs of the primary customers, integrating intelligence and operations, and making INA a diverse, mission-focused, and productive environment for the workforce. In closing, I'd like to take a moment to recognize the important role Congress plays in the success of INA. If confirmed, I pledge to enable the committee to fulfill that role by keeping you fully informed and transparent on INA's activities and developments. Mr. Chairman, I will stop there and submit the remainder of my comments for the record. Thank you again for the opportunity to appear before you today, and I look forward to answering your questions.
David, thank you very much, and once again, I thank all of your family members for their tremendous service to the country, and more importantly, to the security of this country. With that, I'm going to turn to the Vice Chairman to start with questions.
Mr. Glaub, let me also recognize your family, and very impressive, and I know they got to be all very, very proud of you. I want to start a couple of questions in relation to our hearing last week, and just kind of get your sense on this. I want to make, in addition to the questions the chairman asked, will you commit as well to working with this committee as we go forward on our ongoing Russia investigation, making sure that we get as much access as possible, making yourself available, necessary materials, intelligence reports, cables, products, and other materials, and make sure those are, if requested, are provided to this committee as quickly as possible?
Absolutely.
Mr. Glaube, one of the things that came away last week was a real concern, and again, while not directly your area, would just like to get your view. We had representatives from DHS here. They'd indicated 21 states had been the subject of at least some level of Russian incursion. But it became evident through the testimony that in many cases, the only contact that was made with those states may not have even been to the top election official, the Secretary of State, or other election official. It might have just been to the vendor who might have been having the voter registration roll. I think the chairman and I both feel that we are not made safer by keeping that information private. We understand that DHS views the states, they have a collaborative relationship with the states and want to maintain that collaborative relationship, but they in effect view the states as victims and consequently almost feel like it's the obligation of the state to come forward. But we had the top election official from Indiana and from Wisconsin here. Neither one of them knew whether their states had been attacked. We had the Illinois state election official here who had clearly indicated he was the victim of an attack, but until the previous testimony of DHS had not realized, they'd never been told by DHS that it was actually Russia who was behind the attack into the Illinois system. What I'd like you to do is just commit to work with us as we try to sort through this, recognizing that there's no effort here to relitigate 2016 or to embarrass any state, but we've got to make sure that the states that were subject of attacks are prepared so that that information can filter down to local election officials so that they can all take the necessary precautions. Do you want to comment on that, any thoughts you might have, and how we might be able to address this problem?
Sure. Senator, thank you for the question, and I appreciate the opportunity to discuss that. I did watch most of the testimony last week as well. I share your concerns regarding the state and the Russian intrusion into the state electorals, and I also understand the challenges with sharing that information regarding the individual state's vulnerabilities. I am committed to work with you and to be completely transparent with that, and I understand the need to understand who's been hacked or the intrusion occurred, and the unique vulnerabilities to each state, which may be different, and working through those challenges. And I concur with you completely. The solutions aren't going to be easy, and the problem is increasing. And I fully commit, if confirmed, to work with you, sir.
And I would hope that you would be willing to share with us, even if it's on a confidential basis, this committee, so that we can, again, figure out a way to sort through to make sure that we're better prepared.
Absolutely, Senator.
All right. I'm going to hold you to that because I look forward to working with you. I'm down to the last minute. Let me just ask you this. One of the things, as I mentioned in my opening statement, the concept of the Fusion Center makes a great deal of sense. I do wonder at times if there's not duplication, and just wonder whether you have, you know, we're many years in now to this concept. Is it working the right way? And since you're at the nub of this kind of intelligence and analysis, what would you do to improve this concept, or do you feel like it's working?
Senator, again, thank you for the question. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about that. I was actually on the Joint Terrorism Task Force in Richmond, where one of the first fusion centers was stood up in Virginia, so I'm very familiar with it and the challenges. And coming from the state and local perspective, I also have a unique posture of I understand what the needs are of state municipalities as well. If confirmed, I think I'll need an opportunity to wrap my arms around a little bit better on the business structure they have. Each state operates differently, and that's been a challenge. I'm committed to work with the committee and yourself on those challenges and to have a thorough assessment. What I can say is when meeting with numerous of the organizations that graciously supported me, the chiefs and the state law enforcement, we see the need for it. We need a mechanism to share information. I think it's without question there can be improvements in that, and I know Undersecretary Taylor, my predecessor, if confirmed, was working in that direction, and I'm obligated and I'm committed to do that as well.
Yeah, I don't have a set of recommendations. I do think the whole concept, though, needs a fresh look, and I look forward to working with you on that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cornyn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Congratulations, Mr. Glowey, and anything Chairman Grassley, anyone he supports, usually guarantees my support, so look forward to your service, continued service to the country. I do have just a broad question about cybersecurity. During the debates we in Congress have had about cybersecurity, we've been unable to overcome the silos that Congress itself has built when it comes to jurisdiction over this issue, and the concerns we've had about the organization of the Department of Homeland Security since 9/11, and the challenges it's had just culturally dealing with so many different disparate agencies now under the umbrella of DHS. But I'd be interested in your views about the shortcomings and maybe the opportunities that we have in to deal with the cyber threat, because it seems to me like we are doing a poor job as a all of government approach.
Senator, thank you for the question, and also thank you for meeting with me privately and going over some of these issues. I think it's a tremendous opportunity in the department to have an integration of business enterprise towards this. The illicit pathways of the cyber threat knows no boundaries and knows no borders. Transnational criminal organizations, terrorist organizations, foreign intelligence organizations, non-state actors threaten our cyber and threaten the critical infrastructure. I have had some initial briefings on our cyber posture within DHS. If confirmed, I would need to unpack that business process we have in place. But what I can commit, Senator, if confirmed, is I will bring a sense of urgency, because that's the whole world I came from. I've served the public, I've served the community, with a sense where you didn't go home at the end of the night till the threats were mitigated. I view cyber in very much that same lane. I think it's not within just DHS, within the U.S. government, we can say we have room for improvement, and I look working with you and the committee, if confirmed, on that challenge.
Well, people understandably are skeptical of our perhaps most capable government agency when it comes to cyber, which is the NSA, and so by default, it seems like the Department of Homeland Security must assume that role as the intermediary between our agencies like the NSA and the private sector, who views with skepticism also government's ability to keep information confidential when there's so much at risk from a business standpoint, when information about cyber attacks, successful cyber attacks, becomes news. So we look forward to getting your recommendation, and I would just encourage you, we need somebody at the department to stand up and speak with clarity about what we as policymakers need to do to better deal with this threat, because as I said, I don't think we're doing a very good job right now. Thank you.
Senator Manchin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Glowey, for being here. But first, let me thank your family for the service they've given to our country, each one of them, and for you to continue in that footstep of serving our great country. And let me ask, first of all, if you can tell me a little bit about your experience as a police officer in Houston and how that has shaped your service, your dedication to service, and be able to lead the DHS with a different perspective than most have worked themselves through the ranks.
Senator, thank you for the question, and thank you for meeting with me yesterday afternoon. It was a real pleasant and honor to meet you. I've spent a lot of time in West Virginia at our Advanced Training Center out there, and it's a wonderful state and a wonderful facility. And thank you for that opportunity to talk about that. As a Houston police officer, I was 22 years old when I got out of the academy, and I was I just turned 23. I was the youngest police officer in the department when I hit the streets. And I responded to people's homes on the worst day of their lives in an effort and hopefully to make it a little bit better. So when you called 911 and you responded for a call for service, it was inevitably the worst day of someone's life. And with that, brought a sense of urgency and community, but also an understanding of how important intelligence is. And at the time, I probably didn't understand the totality of it, but I surely do now, is we must have forward-leaning, a tactical level intelligence to get to our operators and policymakers to allow the appropriate decisions to be made to mitigate those threats, and working with a sense of urgency. What I have seen throughout my 20-plus years in working up as an entry-level special agent in the FBI in a post-9/11 environment is we have tended to be a reactionary intelligence community. We've tried to fix that. We've tried to be proactive and get ahead of the threats. But some of the critical nodes are as we have to posture ourselves as an intelligence enterprise to be forward-leaning to identify the threats before they happen. Because the worst-day scenario is when you have to call 911 and a uniformed police officer has to respond to the scene after the fact, because that will be the worst day usually of someone's life.
What do you think is going to be the greatest? What do you think is the greatest security threat the United States faces?
Thank you, Senator, for the question. The illicit pathways associated with cyber seem to be an incredible vulnerability, and I don't want to get ahead too much on the policy of the threat priorities that the administration and the Director of National Intelligence and Secretary Kelly will set. But what I will say is the illicit pathways that are being used in the cyber arena and encrypted communication by transnational criminal organizations, by foreign intelligence organizations, by terrorist networks, by non-state actors that are on the full spectrum of illicit activity, from child exploitation, human trafficking, to foreign intelligence activity, we are at a real challenging situation now. How, as policymakers and decision makers, and I can share that intelligence with you to make good decisions on that, I will do everything, and I'm committed to that, so we can keep you informed on that. And I look forward, if confirmed, in working with you on it.
The TSA comes intertwined with your duties. Are you concerned, or do you have any concerns that with our TSA, our technology advancements, to be able to detect any type of foreign intervention, if you will, and how would you build the cooperation between all those nations and countries that have the ability and to fly into our airports and use our U.S. facilities, and the concern that you may have with them bringing danger to our country?
Senator, thank you for the question. And if confirmed, I look forward to taking on that challenge, and it's a big challenge. The information sharing agreements and our vetting processes to identify nefarious actors from any country in the world that pose a threat, from any threat vector, not just terrorism, and again, transnational criminal organizations as well that operate just as sophisticated as a foreign intelligence organization. But back to your comment about aviation security. In any vulnerabilities we have in the aviation security arena, I don't think it's with any question that terrorist organizations still view aviation as a threat vector that they want to attack. And a nightmare scenario is having a U.S. flag or any flag carrier to get taken out of the sky. And it's something that keeps all of us up tonight, and I'm committed to working towards that and looking for those vulnerabilities with Secretary Kelly, the committee, and the intelligence community to work through those threats.
My last question would be, will you, if asked by the President, render your professional assessment regardless if that assessment is counter to the current administration's policy or viewpoint?
Senator, thank you for that question. Absolutely, I will always give my honest assessment with complete integrity of the intelligence process.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Senator Harris.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I couldn't agree with you more on your priorities around cyber and transnational criminal organizations, and if confirmed, I look forward to working with you on those. There's been a report, and I'd just like you to give me your perspective on it and explanation, that while you were acting Under Secretary for Intelligence and Analysis, that you withheld a report as it related to the President's executive order on what we've called the Muslim ban. Can you give me your perspective on that report and what actually happened?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Senator, for the opportunity to clarify that. So I had no involvement in the executive order till the day it was released. And the report that you're referencing there was a compilation of information that was going to be used in the potential or the litigation for the executive order, and it was a combination of multiple intelligence organizations. The information that was contained in that report, a majority was placed in an intelligence product that was disseminated, and I authorized that dissemination shortly thereafter, after that information came out or leak was in the newspaper.
Was there a reason that it was withheld before then?
It was information being compiled in a declaration that was going to be used for the executive order after it was stayed.
So it was work product, is that?
Yes, Senator.
Okay. On the issue of state election infrastructure, you've mentioned that you watched or heard part of the proceedings that we had in that regard. I'm concerned about what we heard in regard to whether or not DHS has adopted an adequate policy for coordinating with states. And one of the concerns that repeatedly we heard and we have heard is that the states are concerned they don't have access to intelligence to safeguard their systems. And obviously we have concerns about classified information and those who do not have authority receiving any classified information. How do you propose we could improve our system to give the states more information and intelligence to emphasize the priority they should place on concerns about hacks?
Senator, thank you for that question. And I have had the initial briefings from NPPD on our infrastructure to share information as well as on the fusion centers. And if confirmed, I look forward to looking at the business enterprise of how we're doing business and having a sense of urgency. Senator, I come from a background in that arena throughout my entire career to operate with sense of urgency, disseminate intelligence at any classification level to mitigate threats. I share your concern that we are not postured possibly in that arena, but if confirmed, I need to unpack and identify those vulnerabilities and how quickly respond to them.
Can you give me examples of what you think might be a remedy or what a remedy would look like? And I appreciate the point you made earlier, which is solutions won't be easy.
Senator, I think I would have to take a stronger look, or I'm sorry, not stronger, a more in-depth look at our current business structure of how that information is being disseminated, what infrastructure is currently in place. I'd like to say that the fusion centers would be a natural touch point for this, but I'm not sure that they're postured today to do that mission, especially when you're talking about intelligence community, high side, top secret information that has to go down to secret or terror line level to get it out there. And also to echo what my predecessor, Frank Taylor, had said, is getting that information in a usable format to the private sector is and their vulnerabilities, which is tremendous. So I, if confirmed, Senator, I share your concerns. We'll work with you to work through those challenges.
And if you did not see that part of the testimony, I'd urge you to review the hearing that we had about what may be a different approach if we're talking about a vendor versus state officials who are elected or appointed to represent the state through the state government system.
Senator, thank you. And I did see part of in some of the confusion involving the legal authorities and disclosure. We've got to work through that. I agree with your frustration, and I'm committed to work through it if confirmed.
And if confirmed, can you give this committee a commitment that you will provide us with a report about your assessment well before the 2018 election, and if possible, provide us that report before the end of this year?
Senator, if confirmed, I absolutely commit to that.
Thank you. I have nothing else.
Thanks, Senator Harris. David, there's been a lot of discussion about the future of the intelligence component at DHS. How it should be structured, how its mission's defined, what authorities it should operate under, and who ultimately its customers are. who do you view as the INA's core customer?
Thank you, Senator, and thank you for the question. I have a unique perspective because I was the head of intelligence at U.S. Customs and Border Protection, the largest component of DHS and the largest law enforcement organization in the United States. The customers are diverse, and it's a challenging because it's not necessarily an either-or. We've got the policymakers and the senior administration officials, which you are the senior policy officials on this from the legislature. But we have the state and locals, and we're statutorily mandated to share information with the state and locals, and we have to do that, and we have to do it well because we're the only ones that are statutorily mandated to do that. But I also see equally is the components. DHS is a powerful, powerful organization, but they've had challenges getting information to them, intelligence, high-side information to the most critical components, and I would use Customs and Border Protection as one of those. They are the last line of defense for incoming foreign threats. And law enforcement data will not cut it alone. We have to, we will have to find solutions that either through our vetting and information sharing agreements or processes to ensure that they get all the information they need on the border to mitigate threats. So, Senator, I apologize, I didn't quite answer. It was a singular one because DHS mission is so important with state and locals, the DHS components, the private sector, and policymakers. We have to serve them all, and I have to, if confirmed, come up with a business plan and process to do that with a sense of urgency and understanding what our customers needs.
Let me ask it a little different way. What value does INA bring?
Senator, thank you. INA's mission is robust, and the employees are outstanding, and they are dedicated and committed to that. Interweaving the DHS components intelligence information is a critical node. They are the statutory also charged to bring Title 50 intelligence community information to the components, with the exception of Coast Guard, which is a standalone intelligence function or IC component within DHS, and also ensuring that they are getting information to the state and local. So I see that as also a heavy-pronged approach. What I would say is, if confirmed, I would bring the mission-focused, operational-focused to ensure we're meeting our customers' need with a sense of urgency. And I believe I said it earlier, is having that mindset to deliver tactical level and strategic intelligence, to move resources, to be adaptive, to mitigate threats immediately. The men and women of INA are incredibly dedicated, incredible people, and if confirmed, I hope they have the opportunity to help them with that mission.
You've got the unique background of having served in a number of different capacities that touch the intelligence community and the product that comes out of it. The committee's been concerned for some time about the analytic duplication that exists across government, the government-wide. Do you share that concern, and what do you see as the analytic component of DHS, or should they be a customer of somebody else's analytic product?
Thank you for the question. And I have been in a unique position throughout my career to understand that challenge, especially as a terrorism agent in the FBI and looking at DHS, INA's role in the terrorism space and the uniqueness of the organization to provide information. And if confirmed, I'm committed to look for the business process to ensure that there is not duplication, that we are at INA, or if confirmed at INA, I would find the business process for that unique space that they operate in, which is ensuring state and local private sector sharing of information both ways. But then I also, within the DHS component, the opportunity to enhance their missions and to integrate it within border security, trade, travel, aviation, and critical infrastructure is a real opportunity, I think, and to look at INA and our processes and business process to facilitate that mission, and then possibly carve out stuff that we don't need that other organizations are doing and doing it well. But to make sure we're fishing, we're using the taxpayers' dollars well, and at the end of the day, we're mitigating the threats.
Given the mission of your agency, as you look forward over the next 10 years, do you see more employees that are government employees or more employees that are contractors based upon what you know the skill sets that you're going to need to attract?
Senator, thank you for the question. I've seen incredibly dedicated contractors I've worked for in my prior capacity. But I believe a workforce, a continuing workforce, a historical workforce with the knowledge coming up through the ranks, like I said, I have, and also maintaining an employee business environment so we retain employees, we're competitive, is critical to DHS INA. So I've seen the committee's past reports on reducing the number of contractors, and I'm committed to that as well, and I agree that we would continue to have a government workforce in maintaining quality employees from the entry level and having career progressions all the way up through the senior executive ranks. I think I'm a benefit of those type of career paths, and I'd like to include that at DHS INA if confirmed.
Listen, I'm going to put you on the spot. In your view, is there any overlap in DHS's and FBI's efforts to counter violent extremists, as others have expressed?
Senator, thank you for the question. I think there is potential overlap there, but business solutions and partnerships, which I will bring with the FBI, are easy for me. I know the FBI well. I'm friends with them. I grew up them through our management change. But the uniqueness of INA, of incorporating suspicious activity and partnering with state, local, and tribal and private sector partners, is the unique spot that INA is in and can fill. Where the FBI is case-driven, investigative-driven organization, DHS INA is not. And my job in INA is to ensure the information and the intelligence is shared on those type of threats, and I think we have an opportunity in partnership with the FBI and our local partners in that threat space.
INA is such a small piece of DHS. Do you have any concerns about getting lost relative to the Secretary's view of what INA is or should be or can be?
Senator, I do. I think the critical thing is scoping the mission with having the mid-level and entry-level managers understanding our mission directly, so we are focused on the main mission of keeping the homeland safe. If we can't be everything to everyone, and that could cause challenges. So the scoping and the business plan, in my opinion, if confirmed, is going to be the critical aspects of INA moving out on a mission-oriented, integrated approach.
I encourage you to make sure that INA is a full partner in the enterprise there versus just the agency you turn to when there's an O-blank moment. I'm going to turn to the Vice Chairman.
I appreciate your comments, and I just want to follow up on what I raised and Senator Harris raised. And you know, I was surprised last week when we had the head of all the Association of Secretaries of State, who basically viewed that the designation of our electoral system as critical infrastructure, she felt that was a burden rather than an asset. And this, again, I'm not sure this will exactly fall within your purview, but I want to just reemphasize it, that you know, something is wrong with our system if we have information and we feel like our top state election officials are not cleared an appropriate security clearance level to actually get briefed on that information. And again, I think we missed, dodged a bullet in 2016 because none of the systems were penetrated to a level that affected. But if there's one word that we've heard from the IC is that the Russians will be back. And I would hope we get to a point where if you were designated critical infrastructure, you felt that that was a net positive to your institution, and DHS was providing both asset support and information sharing in a way that again, make sure that our most critical component of our democratic process, our voting system, is appropriately protected. And again, I hope you'll think through that. I know it's a kind of a new area, and I appreciated the comments from DHS last week. But this is something we got to get to with a real sense of urgency immediately. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Vice Chairman. David, I want to thank you again for, one, your service to the country and your family
Mr.
service
Chairman,
to the country. Senator Manchin.
Is it possible just to follow up on one question?
Gentlemen, the senator is recognized.
Thank you very much. David, what have we learned since 9/11? You know, I understood that we had a lot of, a lot of the intelligence community was warned. We had a lot of chatter going on. We knew, but it didn't like anybody was coordinated or talked to anybody at all. But everyone was concerned about that. In your evaluation, I'm sure, in taking on this role you're going to be taking on, what do you think that maybe you have learned or we have learned or we should have learned, and how can you make sure that doesn't repeat itself? Because you're going to be sharing this all the way down to the level you started at. Now you're at the top of the food chain, and you know what it's like down there. That's where it's got to be stopped. But I've read all the reports on 9/11. It really shouldn't have happened.
Senator, thank you for the question, and I've thought about that for many years. And coming up through the entry-level ranks and serving with some very elite intelligence and operational squads and teams, the one thing I've learned is a mission-integrated, operationally-focused approach. And empowering your leaders, empowering your mid- and lower-level managers and staff with commander's intent, with an operational mindset that all threats must be mitigated. You don't go home at the end of the night till those threats are mitigated. And you share intelligence, you do everything you can within the legal bounds of sharing information with each other. And when you do recognize stovepipes or vulnerabilities, raise them up immediately. You can't sit on them. And I was fortunate enough early on in my career to have been the lead on the Al-Shabaab threat in the homeland at a very entry level, very entry level. And some incredible leaders that I work for allowed me to develop a program in the homeland to mitigate that threat. And that also involved overseas partners, foreign partners, Department of Defense, and the intelligence organizations. I've taken that to heart on how I view every day I go to work is on mitigating threats. So integrating intelligence and operations and clear and direct information lines to policymakers. So as threats are emerging, we need to change. We change together as a team, because I view this as a one team, one fight government approach. Doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. It's about keeping the country safe. I'm committed to that, if confirmed, and I'll always be committed to that.
David, again, I want to thank you and you for your service, your family for your service, their service, and more importantly, for your willingness to fill this role that the President's asked you to do. It's incredible. I've enjoyed your lovely children, and if I didn't have a 15-month-old granddaughter, I'd be taking Alexis home with me today. David, it's the Vice Chair's and my intent to move your nomination as rapidly as we possibly can. As you know, there's a great likelihood that we will adjourn for the 4th of July week tomorrow. I can assure you, if there's any way to get this process moving before we leave, we'll try to do that. Mark and I will talk. If not, we'll do it as quickly when we get back. It's my hope that we can get you permanently placed no later than the July timeframe. My one reminder to you is that DHS has many bosses from a standpoint of policy. You have one, and it's this committee. And the intelligence that you process through the INA is of great interest to us. I want to go back to this duplication thing just very briefly, because having served in the multiple capacities that you have, I think you can understand my frustration. When I sit down in the morning and I go through my intelligence reports from overnight, and I find a report that I read from five different areas, and at the bottom of it, the core source was the same product. It really makes me wonder why we need five different interpretations of the same core product. And if that core product is as important as I think it is, why didn't everybody turn into them versus trying to recreate the wheel with every turn? So I hope you'll remember that as you serve out this term at INA, because I really think we've got to refine what we do and how we do it from an intelligence standpoint. The rest of the world's changing, and they don't have the rules, and they don't have the history to encumber them like we do in the United States. We've got to figure out how to get the history out of the way, but the rules are going to stay, and we will be very aggressive from our standpoint of our oversight of you and of the organization. With that, this hearing is adjourned.